KBOO.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And this Friday, well, we have Consuelo back in the studio here, live in the air room with Once Upon a Time. And we remind you that the phone lines are open for your participation, for you to share with Consuelo and guest everything, you know, about autobiography, poetry, life. And she will definitely clarify that. The number is 503-231-8187.
Hi, good morning. This is Consuelo. I am very happy to be here again. I missed last Friday. And I will introduce to you my youngest guest ever, Hector Mejia Zamora from Guatemala, who is here today to talk about his own writing, autobiography writing, and his experience in the U.S. as an immigrant like myself, and his project and his life. Even if he's very young, everybody's younger than me in this moment, and he has had a very interesting life with a lot of action and commitment to his people and social interests. So, good morning.
Good morning, Consuelo.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you very much. I will start talking a little bit about, let's talk, when, how many years have you been in the state?
I have been here for about 10 years.
10 years. And you have done how many things?
Well, I came here and didn't know much English. I could say, hi, how are you? That was pretty much all.
Almost like me.
I went to PCC, and while I was there, I got a $15 Goodwill bicycle from a little bit crowdfunding that my family did to me with $150. That was my Kickstarter, basically. And I went all over Portland with that bicycle. It was my best friend for 6 months, and I started working as in a fast food restaurant cooking burgers. And from there, after I quit that job, I started washing lenses. In a matter of 4 years, I got 5 promotions, became part of the management team, and then decided to quit while I was driving for Lyft and Uber. And in 2019, I started my own business, which is Café Zamora. And that has been my life for the last 5 years, basically, trying to make sure that I do everything that I can to build bridges between Guatemala and Portland.
Congratulations. You are an entrepreneur and a very curious person. You go from one path to another, and that is mainly curiosity and ambition and intelligence and a lot of willpower. So you have all my respect, my dear.
Thank you.
Because I understand. I would like to know how we are starting the program talking about immigration. How was or how were you are feeling in the beginning, the frustration about the language, I share that too. But what other feeling did you have? Did you have family in Portland when you came?
Yes, my main family was here. My oldest brother was the one who started the process after my father passed away.
Yes.
He brought my mother in. And it took about 6 years for us to get the process going, but they were already here. So that was somehow a different situation for me because I was the only one left back home. So I was like an immigrant in my own country because I was working a lot there. And the thing is that I didn't want to leave Guatemala. It was a little bit of a rough situation because my family was a little bit upset by the fact that they had worked to get all the whatever was needed to be able to bring me here. And I was saying no to that opportunity. And the reason why was because when I was 18, we will talk about this, but after I had an experience with politics, I was able to start a business. I decided that I didn't want to keep going in politics, but I wanted to find a way to give back to the community by getting involved with it. And I started my business with about $50, and it was buying and selling bananas. Uh-huh. And I made that business to go from $50 to $15,000 on sales per month.
Ooh.
So by 19, I was making about $3,000 in Guatemala, which is the doctor's or lawyer's salary.
Of course.
And I was living kind of the Guatemalan dream, and I wanted to stay there. I had a great engagement. We are going to talk about the discrimination that exists there. But because of that unfortunate discrimination that exists, the people that I was working with saw that I didn't have any of that, and they basically adopted me. It was an indigenous that I was working with, and they helped me a lot to grow my business. So when the green card came to come here, I didn't want to move because, you know, I was building community. I was getting great relationships there with the community, learning from different groups of people. But because of that, I never really was interested in learning English. So when I moved here, it was shocking because I was somehow by my own in Guatemala, but I was doing fine. And then I come here, I couldn't really find a good job. You know, I went from making $3,000 and having a budget of $150 for my whole necessities to now having to somehow come up with $1,000 and make $500 every 2 weeks. So it was a completely shock in the financial aspect of it. And culturally, not knowing the language was a barrier, but I wasn't so overwhelmed by that. I was once again curious to, you know, see what was going to be next.
And what about the homesick?
Since I had my family here, that really helped a lot.
Yeah.
But I came here in January, and in 2014, we got some snow in February. And that was a kind of cool experience, but at the same time, not what I was used to. I really wanted, and especially the lack of sun. That was something that still nowadays hits me hard.
I agree. That happened to me. I came in November 1985, the 19th of November, I will never forget. And it was snowing. And I went for a week, depression. I couldn't get out of my bed. The only thing I wanted was to come back to Chile and to the sun, because it was springtime in Chile. And I think the weather has a big impact the way how we feel and how we confront day-by-day life. I do understand. And let's now move to the book that you wrote. Mm-hmm. And what is the main subject? Because that is obviously your life and your emotion. But what was the event that triggered that aspect?
Yeah, unfortunately, my dad was 49 years old when he passed away for mainly for cancer. It was a combination of factors. His system was too weak, unfortunately, to be able to remove. It's called vesícula in Spanish.
Yes, and, the bladder.
Yes, and the doctors didn't want to have surgery. So unfortunately, it exploded inside of him, and that all the liquids just went all over his system, and it was a very painful months that took his life. So in order to deal with depression, I started writing, and I really got into it. It took me about 1 month. It was a probably 6 months overall until the time that I realized that I wanted to do something about what I was dealing with, and it was writing the book. In that book, I really learned a lot because at the time, we didn't have access to internet in my village. I had my brother's computer because he was studying in the capital, and he had a virtual encyclopedia, so I could get exposed to the curiosity of what it was out there and kind of get details to write about. Or describe in my book. It was kind of religiously influenced. At the time, I was a very active Catholic member of the church. But I learned a lot in so many different ways. I still give a lot of my current and nowadays life and way of thinking to what I kind of discovered through my own teaching or investigations, if you will, back then. Of how the world works, because it really, you know, it was about 200 pages that I really got myself to write into it.
Yeah, but I am more interested about you because we believe in this program that words are tool to heal, and about your emotion, about the feeling of abandonment that we feel when our parents die or our best friend, and also how you dealt at that moment with your daily life. How were you getting out of bed? If you were depressed, sometime, like my case, I stay in bed. I cannot do anything.
Well, for me, I think that even nowadays, I will say that I'm still living by the same promise that I did back then when I was writing, which was in the book, I made a promise to God that I was going to do great things in order to get my father's life back. And I think that even though I might just not happen here in this world, in this life, I'm still committed to do good and honor my dad's life in order to be back with him at some point.
Very nice. I think you are doing that, no doubt about that. But still, you are not talking about your emotion. Those are your project. Those are the way how you wanted to deal, and you are dealing with the loss that you had. But the book also, I am sure, it had a lot of sentiment and feeling and emotion. Were your emotions? What emotion did you speak on the book?
This was 16 years ago, and I'm still working on it. I blocked myself on several emotions. I wasn't able to really get myself vulnerable, so I just created some sort of cover that blocks or keeps people away from that.
Yeah, that is one way to cope, and everybody has their own way. I respect that, and I think it's important. I am very pleased that you thought that word will help you to move a little bit further in the pain. And word are healing, and they were helping you. Still, they do. And let's talk now about all your commitment to your community in Guatemala. How is the relationship now with them?
Yeah, so I unfortunately didn't learn much about my father when he was alive. I learned more about him after the fact that he passed away. And I'm still learning, which is great that I get to talk to new people and they get to tell me about his life, his interactions with him. And one of his commitments was to be able to work with the community to improve the overall life of the people there. And one way that he thought about finding a solution was to eliminate the middlemen between roasters and farmers. And one of his goals was to connect with roasters in the U.S. to sell directly the coffee. I wasn't really interested back then to learn much about it. But now I have become basically the person that my father wanted to find. And I'm trying to keep working my best to be that for more people. And we do now have, I'm a cooperative member. We're about 40 plus farmers now. And we do everything. We harvest the coffee, we process the coffee and the mill. And we bring the coffee here, roast weekly, and distribute the coffee here. So by not having middlemen, we can pay more money to our farmers back home and have competitive prices here in the U.S. as well. So still work in progress, but basically it is still back to what my father wanted to do several years ago.
Very good. So you are bringing his wishes and philosophy into alive, into now. And I heard that you had also a kind of foundation for children, helping children.
No, so it's through the cooperative. It's not a foundation. So basically what we do is that I have been a member of this cooperative for about 6 years. They have been in existence for 21 years so far. And this cooperative had been able to build a school, a clinic, their own mill, dry and wet. And now we are in the process. We kind of had to pull back a little bit because of the last year's elections was very rough and there was a lot of chaos going around that we didn't want to get ourselves involved. But the project that I personally am involved with is for a computer lab in this community to be able to give access to the children to not only education for the computers, but also to how to properly use the internet. And we're working now with the mayor of the city there that won the next 4 years to not only have this program that we want to implement for the children to learn English in one of the computer labs that we're working with the cooperative, but also in two others that are within the same municipality that will be helped by this new mayor that we have there.
Oh, great project. I agree completely and I will support it. I want to know now about your relationship with the community in Portland.
Well, here I have been building up community little by little. It has been very interesting participating in different events for small businesses, different communities of people of color, and in other communities in general. I still feel that I don't have the same engagement as I have back home, because we all are doing something in different ways, but somehow it doesn't feel as personal. I do have a great personal community within my radius where I have my shop. If you go around there, all the neighborhood gets to talk to me, and I get to talk to them, and we know each other. So that has feel really good. Like within the coverage of the coffee shop, I feel that I have my own little town.
Nice, nice. Bueno, it takes time. It's a step by step. And you are already doing a lot. And it's not the amount of quantity of how we do. It's the quality of what we do. Mm-hmm. And you obviously are in the right path. So
thank you.
Take it with patience. You are young, extremely young, in my opinion. And it will come. It will come.
Thank you.
I will make a pause to tell our listeners that this is the time. If you want to make question to Hector, it's 503-231-8187. And also, I will take the opportunity to ask you for your collaboration and generosity, as always, to kbu.fm/give. That is one possibility. The other is by text, SMS, text kbu to 44321. We welcome, and we are very appreciative of anything that you can share, give us, to keep going with this wonderful station and with this many wonderful program that bring interesting guests like today, this young man who has done a lot for his own country, and he is making everyday community here in Portland through his coffee place. Now I want to talk about a little bit about oral tradition. I make a connection between Guatemala and Hector life to oral tradition, because not everything has to be written. Usually the oral tradition is a form of human communication where knowledge, art, ideas, and cultural material as receiving, preserve, and transmit orally from one generation to another. This is exactly what happened to you, what is happening right now, every day, and before, after your father passed. You have been learning about him through the people who knew him. This is what you said.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, can you explain a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so one of the things that I have been enjoying when I get to talk to other people is telling them why I'm doing what I'm doing, and then seeing their reaction about like, oh, yeah, that's basically your dad's wish. That's what we knew that your father was doing, and that feels even better because it's not something that he wanted to do. It's something that he had already started, and I'm continuing his work. So
you're continuing his legacy.
Yes.
Yes, you are.
So that definitely fulfills me and motivates me to keep going and you know, keep giving my best even in the hardest times.
Yeah, it is interesting because the oral tradition is also is possible for a society, in this case for your family and your surrounded, to transmit oral history, oral literature, and oral law, and other knowledge across generations without writing system or in a parallel to a writing system. This is what it is interesting. That this is the reason because it's called oral tradition, mm-hmm. because it comes mainly that way, is the word, and goes to generation. So in this case, his friend, his acquaintance, the people that he touched in his life is telling you another side of your father that you never knew.
Yeah.
It happened to me with my grandmother. My grandmother died when I was 3 years old. I saw her in the coffin. My father showed it to me. And I fell in love with her in that moment. And I start loving her because I get to know her through my mother, through her, my uncle and aunt, through her friend. through her writing, through the writer that she read. Everything showed me. I have her photography on my bedroom, and I admire her tremendously. And when my uncle was dying, he told my mother, this is my mother's diary, this is for Consuelo. And when I received it here in Corvallis, I was jumping at the post office of joy. It was like she was near me. And that was oral tradition in some ways. Also, it is interesting, you are Catholic as I am, but several religions, such Catholic, Buddhist, Hinduism, have used oral tradition to transmit their canonical scripture, ritual, and methodology from one generation to another. We have to think that what happened when we didn't have a printing, that was everybody was speaking to another, and community, African society, for example, has been labeled oral civilization as opposed to literate civilization. You see, that happened, I am sure, in Guatemala. What do you know about the native of Guatemala? This is the way how they transmit knowledge and experience and to their new generation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there is a... it has been very interesting to me to study not only what was, for instance, with my dad, but also earlier before the show, we were talking about my grandmother. That was the only one that I got to meet. All my other grandparents passed away before I was born. Matter of fact, my grandfather, my mother's dad, died the day that I was born. And somehow I have the most similitudes to him. He was very interested in history. My mom gets to tell me about the stories that he knew, that he used to tell them. But I feel that Guatemala, unfortunately, because of the civil war that we experienced, a lot of that was lost. And many people stopped talking about the past because of fear. And that's something that I'm still finding. It seems that now we are getting to get confidence again on learning about what has happened before and get to talk without fear. But unfortunately, there is a gap in history or at least a gap in curiosity of people because it was taken away from them. So yeah. It's very important to get back to it and you know, be aware that that's an important piece of our lives.
Yeah, and what about the process of coffee? They follow a tradition that passed for generation to generation?
So this is the other very interesting thing that I find, because for me, the people that I work with are farmers that have been in the coffee industry not for that much time. Oh. For the most part, people, especially here in Portland, that is a very competitive market.
But I am talking about Guatemala, not Portland.
Yeah, that, I have a point.
Okay.
So people are used to knowing that, you know, the farmers that have generations after generations of working with families that had old farms. But to me, the problem is that the knowledge that was once passed for those families has a lot of dark history, a lot of slavery, a lot of forced labor, child labor, etc. So we are actually in a new age in our community in which we are rethinking about what was done before and definitely learning from what it was, but also in a very delicate position in which many people are giving up in keeping that because people just don't want to keep repeating the same cycles.
Yeah, of course, we have to avoid that, but also we learn from experience. So in some ways, the whole relationship between children labor has been changed in many places in the world, and that is something that is very good, and not only very good, I think was mandatory. And but I thought that maybe in the is that gap that is exists is what is the reason? Is mainly politic reason or something happened? You said that there is a gap in how things were doing before and now.
Well,
in relation to the community of the farmer.
Well, as I was telling you, we have this, well, for the people that might not know. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, hi.
Hi, Consuelo, this is Wade.
Hola, Wade. Bonjour.
I am a, Okay, bonjour. I'm in Washington County Jail. I'm a political prisoner. I was arrested the night I read that poem to you.
Oh, really? How
yes.
come? How
I only come? Have 2 minutes now. I only have 2 minutes. I have to make this quick.
Yeah.
If you want to come and visit me, I'm at 260 Southwest Adams Street, Hillsboro, Oregon, 97123. Visiting hours are Monday in the morning till about noon.
Yeah, it's the time I am working, so I cannot go.
I get it.
Yeah, I am working until 10 o'clock at night.
Okay, I've spent a year in solitary confinement and 3 months then at OSH for my poetry. It's not begging Uncle Sam, it's in his face. We need peace now, and I'm not going to ask him, I'm telling him.
Okay.
That's why I'm here.
But I
wanted you not to worry.
Yeah, I will not worry and keep being safe and call a good lawyer. You should have a lawyer.
I do. I think this guy's going to help.
Okay.
Yeah, some of them are pretty lousy, but...
Very good.
Peace to you all. I wanted you to know where I'm at.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. I appreciate it. I have your mail, so I will read it after the show.
Oh, you did get it?
Yes, I did get
it. You got my post?
Yes, I get the post in French and the letter,
you have
everything.
1 minute remaining for this call.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Take care. Thank you for calling and let me know. Bye-bye. I miss you. Sorry for the interruption, but this was...
Okay,
this was important because he's in a very interesting situation. I don't know how much is true. Like I told you before, I have been surrounded by a scammer. And so keep going. We were talking about the gap.
Yeah, for me, it's very important to be able to highlight the fact that when we got the civil war in 1955 till 1996, many people were forced out of the country. And many of the people that were working back then in farms that came to the States were able to, you know, make themselves with some resources. It was partially the case of my family as well, that they were able to fund themselves to buy some land. And that's the type of people that I work with. It's not people that have tradition of farming from several generations in the past.
Yeah.
It's people who were workers of other wealthier farmers, and now they have become independent and they are in the search for, you know, that balance. And I think that is about 125,000 small farmers that are in Guatemala that are basically within this group as well.
Yeah, very good. Bueno, the same happened in Chile. We did what we call the agrarian reform.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who were working in the big farm or ranch, they became owner of a piece of land.
Yeah.
It was given to them. And now they have several cooperatives. When I was organizing a visit within my company to those places, we got to see many cooperatives of different products, fruit, winery, etc. And they were people that start in a very humble way, and they create this cooperative, and this entitled them and empowered them. And they were very doing a lot of business, sending to the state and other places in the world.
Yeah.
So I think it's one way to grow, very, very interesting way to grow anyway. But following with the, is my subject today, the oral tradition, because I insist that in this, it happened also in Chile. In Chile we have a folk woman called... I forgot in this moment, but Violeta Parra, and she committed suicide many years ago, and she went town to town taking all the tradition and folk, song, poetry, and then she wrote a lot about that, beautiful, the Gracias a la Vida, Thanks to Life, was written by her, a very popular song, and this is what she was in charge of doing, that to rescue all this tradition. And I think it's, for example, the folklore is a type of oral tradition, but other than folklore has been orally transmitted and this preserved in human history, and thus preserved in human history. Yeah, this is a very important aspect because when we do that, we are getting other generation to get to know how was life in the past, how those people lived, and why they did the thing they did, and how many problem and trouble they have to confront. And this is what you are doing. And also, that is sociology. We need to learn how other society has been dealing with life, daily life. Also is linguistic, because it goes in an oral tradition, and also verbal art, because music is influenced, and poetry is influenced, and any writing. And the grand Kipling, he wrote a book called The Jungle Book in India. It's about India. And he talked about the law and human archetype in animal form, and how we have to survive, and how it's important to be learning from past generation. And this is something that you are doing your daily life, learning in Portland and learning also in Guatemala. Okay, here we are. We have another call. Hi.
Hi, Consuelo.
Hi. How are you, my friend?
Yes. You know, I find your discussion this morning really interesting, and I'm curious when I think of oral tradition, I think of all the cultures in the world and how many of them rely on, well, more oral tradition than others, but that's the only way of communicating back before we were writing and publishing research studies. People learned to farm, as your guest has said. But, you know, also the celebrations, you know, the Mexican holidays with the piñatas and all the things that they celebrate, and the American Indians and all the things they celebrate and the traditions they have. And some are happy and some are sad. Some relate to funerals and some relate, you know, a funeral procedure for someone who's passed away, and others are celebratory for harvesting crops and animals for food. So it's interesting to me just to think all that through and realize how much has come from oral tradition and now is a standard part of life.
I agree. I think it's very important, and we have to rescue as much as we can, because, like I said, it's a sociology study. Uh-oh. What happened? It went away? Something happened? Anyway, we will keep going with what we were talking about. And my friend, is a very good point, what Norma said. All the tradition in terms of the folk and not only the folk, but the conversation and the food and the winery, for example, when we celebrate when it's the season where the grapes are ready, and in Sicily, in Chile, in France, in the state, in every place, we celebrate the week of the wine is ready, the grapes are ready, and the harvest is a big celebration all over the world. It's also the equinox, how the seasons are changing. And all of that we learn from our past generation, many, many past generation. Are you there again, Norma? No? Okay. And I think it's, what kind of tradition did you learn in Guatemala, for example? What kind of folk or celebration?
In our area, Catholicism is still a very strong ruler, I will say. So right now, Easter is one of the main biggest events that we have there. And the one that gets to be celebrated the most as a community, we have basically Easter and Christmas are the two main times in which we celebrate. One of the things that it's kind of important to highlight is that where I'm from, we don't have that much indigenous communities, only less than 2%. So we don't have as much culture from the Guatemalan indigenous parties have been mainly from the colonizers, I will say, that brought that culture to us. But one of the ones, at least in my area, that has the most weight is the Catholic traditions.
Yeah, well, they colonized, no? Yeah. So they brought not only the wine, they brought the faith, and they brought the education, and they brought other nasty things, like all groups that they come and take the land by power.
That's right.
And but yes, Easter probably they celebrate like they celebrate in Spain. In Chile, it's not that big, because I think the Catholic Church has been losing the control and the importance. And but there are other celebrations. For example, here, Thanksgiving is a celebration that we are still, and we love it, and it's very meaningful. All the family get together. And sometimes I think that it's bigger than Christmas, for example, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, and other celebrations that they are meaningful. And I think the important is, like I said before, is to get to know how other group of people deal with daily life, yeah. with weather problem, with food problem, with family problem, with work, labor. All those things are important, don't you think?
I agree.
Yeah. And I also think that the transmission, and it come together with autobiography and the power of writing and reading, because in some ways it's the way how you learn not only about the past, but you learn about yourself. And that is what is very important to pay attention, that is you get the feedback from the past, but you can assimilate, and you do assimilate in a way. That happened to you.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of the things that I also get to talk to people about, the importance of learning about our past to be able to move forward as well to our future, that sometimes many somehow get blocked in believing that what is happening to them or to us right now is something that has never happened before. But once we get ourselves into learning what has been in the past, we get to see that there is a background, there is already somewhere that we can look at and learn from that. And the only way to improve is by learning what others have done as well.
Yeah, I am completely agree. And I think it's fundamental, because the oral tradition is not necessarily history, because there is a lot of mythology also.
I agree.
Okay. Hi. I think also, I thought about, we have been interrupted because of the call, and I have been thinking about Woody Guthrie. He is the equivalent in my mind to Violeta Parra, because during the 30s, he moved to Pampa, Texas, and he was called the Dust Bowl during the Great Depression. And he was a musician who was recruiting all kind of folk and traditional children's song and improvised work. And he became very, very popular, and his work was very serious and very political, with a lot of political commitment. And at the end of the show, we are going to listen one of his song, and I want to make to honor him today, because what he did was very, very important. Okay, you were saying?
Yeah.
We have been interrupted.
No worries. That's very important for us to also get to ask questions to our family members, friends, about their experience. Sometimes we think that we know someone, but it's not until we really get to get into deep conversations with each other that we get to learn about the past and you know, improve as well. As I was telling you, the best way for us to move forward is by understanding our past. And that's something that I emphasize a lot in my community because of that gap that I feel that we got.
Yeah.
Many people are still lost of trying to understand the why, but without really looking for the right answers, that is learning our history.
Yeah, we are the past.
Yeah.
Yes. This is what we are. We are the past, and it's very important to acknowledge, to accept it, and to not live in the past. That is also true. Mm-hmm. But it's the only way we can put all the puzzle about our life and our emotion and feeling and knowledge and mistake. When we put that puzzle together, and we feel that we have control our life. And that is very important. And one way to get that control is through knowing our past.
Yeah.
And it's fundamental for countries, family. I was telling somebody else the other day to go and visit his family or his ancestor in Ireland. And he said, this is not important to me. It's important to you. Hmm. And I thought, oh, probably I told him, at your age, I thought the same. That wasn't important to me, go to Italy and see where my great-grandparents came home from, Lake Como. And when I went, I realized that was super important because it was one part of my life that I needed to not only acknowledge, but to recognize. And sometimes it's the only way when you go back to those to your ancestor, when you really take control of your whole history. That's important because it's genetic. So if you get a disease or something, it's important to know where that comes from, or a tendency to some certain things or habits. So it's not something that is at random.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree. And as I was mentioning, one of the other things that I find very interesting is that because of that constant believing that it's not, as you said, it doesn't matter to us in that moment, that's one of the biggest mistakes that sometimes we do, because not allowing ourselves to learn from others get to put us in a position in which we might learn the hard way. So the more open we are to listen and learn about others' experience, the better off we will be for our lives as well.
Yeah. And are you thinking about publishing that book that you wrote, or are you thinking about editing and to put it into, because it's in Spanish, I guess, and that will be great. And sometime there are opportunity for you to present, for example, the Monomat Library have a kind of a project. And I present my book, and it was published as an e-book. Mm-hmm. So you can be the same.
Yeah, at some point I would like to get back into it and write it again, add more factual details of my present life, more than what I dealt with at the time, and kind of combine them, because at the time it was mainly a fiction type of book. But now I feel that with the experiences that I've had, we were talking before the show about, you know, my experience with politics, what happened with the death threats that I got, the mining companies that kind of canceled a show that I had at the time in Guatemala, and the involvement in politics that I've had. I would really like to describe that in more detail and be able to share it with people.
And what about politics here?
Well, I find them, unfortunately, not as different as they are in Guatemala nowadays. It's so much dirt everywhere that I have preferred to be open to listen, be open to tell what I think, but at the same time, do my work with my own private money instead of trying to go public by any means.
Yeah, I understand. But are you a citizen? Are you becoming a citizen? So you.
I am a citizen.
Oh, so you are going. You are going to vote.
Yes, definitely.
So do I. Yeah, I think I have a political view of life too, because everything, in my opinion, is political. Even love is political, become political, and it's important to really have to show our opinion especially in this election, coming election,
yeah,
again. And we cannot be mute.
That's correct.
No, especially when you are, in your case and my case, and all of the people here and many of the listeners probably too, you are committed to your community.
That's correct.
Yeah. And when you have that strong feeling of solidarity and empathy, it's impossible not to have an opinion and not to say it. As you said, you can be open. We should be open to different opinion. It's
yeah.
true. But also, we have to be very conscious about what we think is the best for our community.
Yeah, yeah. And as we were talking earlier related yeah. to the oral tradition yeah. of how I got to learn the history of my country from two uncles, one kind of progressive yeah. and the other one very conservative, I think that's also something that I'm noticing more, that some of the people that are opening up about learning the past, learning about the history, trying to come up with an ideology for who are they are going to be voting for. Sometimes it's very important to be able to listen to others, but at the same time, it's very important to also fact check and learn from the behaviors of our politicians in the past as well.
Yeah, I think, that is the reason, because autobiography is very important. Okay, I will remind one more time, Norma, if you can call us again, that will be very nice, because we can listen to your opinion. It was very important, and we agree, all of the three of us here agree with you. 503-231-8187. We have been kind of eclectic with the interruption, but now we have an open air communication, and we would love to have you again. And somebody else has something to say, a question to Hector and or to me in relation to the whole conversation, or something new. And we encourage you one more time to write and to tell us what are you doing, what are you writing, or what memories are, what event are bringing new memories that you feel that is important to write. And what about now, your life now, how you are dealing with the past? I mean, with your life did you come to terms with the previous life that you have in Guatemala? Have you been going back to Guatemala?
I had. Okay. I'm very lucky. I'm grateful for the opportunities that I've been getting. Since I have this connection with the community back home, I have even more reasons to be going back. And also, I'm engaged. I have been engaged for a while, and now we're in the process of being able to get my fiance here.
Yeah.
So I have been also going to visit her while I do some work at the farms with our community members or the cooperative members. But I do see myself getting more and more involved with projects there, especially now that I have been able to get access to more people. We are working with some other members of Guatemala for projects related to education, trying to promote more free internet access, and mainly how to properly use internet as well, how to use that as a powerful tool and not as a distraction tool.
Yeah, entertainment and distraction and yeah. stupidity sometimes, and pornography and corruption.
Yeah,
it's very interesting how it has something that was very visionary and very good. It has been developed in something that is almost a weapon.
Yeah, it has weaponized.
It's a weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, weaponized. Yeah, in a very bad way. I mean, I don't like it at all. Hi.
Hi, Consuelo. I'm almost sorry to interrupt you.
No.
But you didn't get many calls. I'll make it quick. My name is Richard. I'm 80 years old here in Portland. I listened to your show. I was a Spanish interpreter in the Army years ago. So I have a connection with toda la cosa latina.
I used to say, you have a Latin soul.
Yeah, I do. I even know the dances. I used to go to dance all the time in New York City. And when I came out of the Army, they thought I was from Cuba because my accent. Yeah, I was speaking that well for an American. I was like a parrot, you know.
Okay.
So anyway, on today's theme, my father died in the Second World War when he was 26 in New Guinea out in the Pacific.
Yes.
He was in the jungle. He was a major in charge of in the Army Air Force. And anyway, the reason I mention this is because his father, being my grandfather, of course, wrote a book to try to tell me who his father was. And the other brother, my uncle, who also died in Europe in the same Second World War.
Yeah.
So this book, I first saw it, you know, when I was old enough to be mature a little bit. At 10 years old, they gave it to me, the family. Mm-hmm. And it meant a lot to me. But here's the point, that now at 80 years old, it means more to me. It's closer to me than it was 70 years ago when I was 10. I'm realizing all these all the people who came before me, especially when you get to learn about them, they're a part of you. I feel it. I lie in bed at night in the lights out in the dark before I go to sleep, and I think of all the lovely people I never met who led up to me. And I don't know how to put it. Here's the point, though, I want to make. A couple years ago, I had some trouble with my son, who's here in Portland, beautiful person, who's now 56 and a psychologist. Well, he's probably very good at what he does. I'm sure he's a sensitive, beautiful person, but for 5 years we haven't spoken, and it's the hardest thing I've known in my life. So every 6 months I write him, and in one letter I said, I wrote about my grandfather, and then he wrote back and said, you're not grandpop. And I'm not you. But I'm thinking, nope, you got it wrong, boy. That all the time I spent with my grandfather growing up, that's a part of the way I communicate with people. And maybe I made some mistake with you in that. It's all like a chain. So that's all I wanted to say. That it's all part of the present. This past is right up till today.
Beautiful. I agree completely. Everybody here agree with you, and I am so touched that you wanted to share something so personal and meaningful to you. And we are our past, and I do understand that that book obviously didn't have the importance when you were 10 years old. But now that you are a grown up man and probably lonely in so many ways, like we all are at this point in our life, this book is your Bible. It's the Bible of your family. It's your tradition. It's who you are. It's who they were. It's a lot of things and a lot of emotion, feeling, and beautiful memories. And I am sure when you wake up like I did today at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I think about all my parents and my family and the friend that I lost, and like you do, you feel that you are not alone. These people, in some ways, they're there inside of you, and you are preserved, like this young man preserved the legacy of his father. You are preserved the legacy of your grandparents. And all of people here, we are here at the studio today, we are that kind of people, good people that we have made mistake, like you recognize openly, and who doesn't? I mean, even God. I mean, when I think about Easter, he was betrayed. So how can we expect not to be betrayed for the people who love sometime? And today is a special day for Catholic people, and your Latin American soul should be very happy because you have done a lot of things for the Spanish language. Translation is not that easy as people think. So I do appreciate very much, okay? And keep calling and keep listening to the program. I would love to have you again.
Okay, in closing, Cordillera de Sueños, the Cordillera of Dreams, Guzman.
Oh, nice. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Maravilloso. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Gracias. Thank Muchas you. Gracias. Nos hablamos. Bye bye, Richard. Un abrazo. Bye bye.
Okay.
And okay, this I want to say thank you to my guests. It has been very interesting to speak about oral tradition, autobiography, Guatemala. Now everybody wants to go to Guatemala. We should go. My father fell in love with Guatemala when he went 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I hope to have you again April the 5th. We will have a very interesting woman poet that write wonderfully. And we will talk about Palestine, and we will talk about autobiography and women in literature. And remember, as my wonderful boss said, this program is about calling. So we need more call. It's important. I know that there are people listening to this program that have been receiving very nice compliment. I really appreciate. We do our best. But we need your presence in the program. I know you are in some way or another. And I have my loyal caller, what I really appreciate, like my friend Norma. And I hope if you have some idea about future program, you can write to me and write to the radio and leave a message. And I will obviously consider and whatever you have in mind. We have an open mind here, and we are going to finish with a wonderful song by Woody Guthrie, who was a very important person in the oral tradition in this country during the Depression. I hope to talk to you April the 5th. Thank you very much to all of you, and take care and enjoy this wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our union down. But our union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our union's gonna break them slavery chains. I walked up on a mountain in the middle of the sky. Could see every farm and every town. I could see all the people in this whole wide world. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down, down, down. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down. When I think of the men and the ships going down while the Russians fight on across the Don, there's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down. But when I think of the ships and the men going down and the Russians fight on across the Don, there's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.